Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editors meeting.
Welcome to episode 41 of the Cool Shit Podcast. Every week we are straying further away from the rules. We've got two guests here that have decided to make up their own rules, and James isn't happy.
No, well, fortunately, Joe's gone off brief and bought too many stories, and Dom's gone off brief and not bought any, so we can compromise and it'll just be like a normal episode.
They balance each other out. But, intros. We've got Dom, he's back, Zach's business director. Still kind of new to the company, so...
Been 4 weeks.
Yeah, four weeks and two podcasts. Not bad.
Yeah, that's all I do.
Yeah. Isn't it literally like your month's anniversary today?
Yeah, tomorrow.
What a way to celebrate.
Yeah.
What a way.
Go a bit closer to the mic, please.
Sorry.
Thanks.
Sorry.
And we've, as you've heard, we've got Joe.
Or maybe not heard.
Or maybe not heard. Yeah, she was a bit far from the mic. We've got Joe, the CEO and founder of the agency. Very important boss lady who has lots of stories for us today. But we're going to start with James, who
who stole my idea.
Who's in his usual position of being the editor-in-chief of the Cool Shit newsletter and podcast / the little chief / the little chef. Hi.
Hi.
How are you? Apart from being grumpy about the rule changes.
I was kept up last night by some foxes doing some very noisy kissing.
They make so much noise.
Yeah. Noisy kissing?
Yeah.
he means something else.
A bit of crepuscular copulation, methinks. And it was awfully noisy. And I'll tell you what was weird, actually. As soon as I got out of bed to like hammer on the window and say, shut up, they were completely silent. And it was as if like I'd interrupted. Like, I walked into someone's bedroom and they were like, do you mind?
You clearly had. Apart from that cool story, have you got any other cool stories? What have you found this week?
I do. I actually, Dom says stole. I actually bought a story kind of devoted to each of our guests here because I think they're relevant for both of you. Dom, because you originally posted the video in our work group chat. Actually, who was going first?
So you then stole it?
Hang on. Okay, so Cortez are like a London-based, previously kind of more underground, but now become quite a popular streetwear brand, and they're known for like their kind of like interesting guerrilla marketing and activations. And this week they've launched a collaboration with Nike by doing an old school sort of crossbar challenge, where basically you turn up. They released the secret location on the day, and you turn up, and if you hit the crossbar, then you win a pair of Nike and Cortez Air Max.
Air Max 95s. People love trainers.
Yeah. Sick, isn't it?
It is. Do you like it, Dom?
Dom, seeing as the story was, you know, taken from you, why don't let's start
stolen
with you. What do you think?
Stolen with over 24 hours notice, yeah.
Someone doesn't check his team's messages, that's what it is.
Well, there you go.
What do you think of this? And I guess as a brand, they've done this multiple times, haven't they? So
yeah, they've done it multiple times, and it's also nothing which is new, so it's super interesting how they managed to get like loads of uptick from it all the time.
Hype always, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. So it's super interesting. I mean, I've many times in my career tried to do like, you know, like treasure hunts with Tiny Temper around London with Nike and stuff, and it works out okay, but it's nowhere near as kind of what these guys have created. So it's just super interesting kind of brand study and how they've managed to do it. And I guess my take on it is they've just been super real to kind of what the brand was. Even though they've collaborated with Nike, it's still kind of super ownable to them. And then what I particularly liked is, for those who don't know, Camavinga is a French footballer, now plays in Madrid for Real Madrid.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So thanks.
Did you know that, James? Or did that slip through your research?
I did. Did I not post that in the WhatsApp group? So you didn't know.
I didn't realise that when you sent that to the WhatsApp group, it was, you're allowed to watch this and that is all. Leave it alone. It's mine. Yeah. I forget that you weren't so incredibly hard on producing that campaign.
But no, it's great. So he's a French player, plays in Spain, and they've dubbed his voice to sound like a London urban kid using the slang, which would, you know, resonate with the audience. So it's great. And it just got everyone speaking, and it was, you know, a 15-second video. Love it.
Yeah, I think a 10-year-old actually managed to get a pair. Was it only one pair available?
Yeah. There are people queued up. There was queues like going around the block. This happened before when they did it. I think they like rented out like a 99p store and put like
cargos
cargo
in there.
Pants, yeah.
And just like half of London just descends upon this place. So the same thing happened here. They release the location and then people queue up to get one shot at a crossbar. And if you hit it, then they've got all the shoes in a van and you can win it. And like, and this, like Cortez stuff is already kind of incredibly sought after. And like with a Nike collaboration, like, these shoes are going to be worth an awful, yeah, an awful lot of money, mm-hmm, very soon, basically.
They're actually quite nice as well. Like, they are nice. Compared to like the Tiffany ones, which were pretty ugly, these,
yeah,
are quite,
no,
nice.
Yeah, they are nice. But this is the thing, because I think you can't touch this, Dom, because they said, because I think Cortez said, the guy who runs it, like Clint 419, he said they'd never really, I think he said he didn't want to do any collaborations, but then obviously Nike come knocking, you change your tune slightly, I suppose. But what they have retained in it is like the vast majority of the creative control, like from the products to the activations. So it's like, it's a collaboration, but like, as you said, it still feels very authentic to the brand and what got them here.
Yeah. Joe, you didn't fancy shooting a ball at a crossbar in a bid to win a pair of trainers, no?
No.
That's it. Done.
And what about you, Gina? You didn't fancy winning a pair?
Oh, look at Dom. He's now hosted the most. He's trying to take over James' role, yeah, sourcing stories, and now my role.
Yeah, that's right. One man show.
I didn't fancy winning a pair. I mean, they're nice, but I don't. I'm not really buying into it. Or I feel like I'm not, you know, an 18-year-old boy that would be really happy to get a pair. Not fussed on it, but I can admit it's very cool, and it seems like typical of the brand to be doing things like this, yeah, right? And then, yeah, even more so with Nike, it's just only going to get bigger and more sought, yeah, after, like James said.
It's clever as well, kind of, because it's not, the idea of doing like a crossbar challenge is like the opposite of revolutionary, but it's like an incredibly kind of recognizable trope to like the 18-year-old boys, yeah, who would be the ones who are actually interested in winning this. And it's just kind of easy and instant, like exciting content as well. And it's kind of one of those things where even if you shit at football, you could have like a 100 chance of hitting off a crossbar. So yeah, I think it's very smart.
What else have you got for us, James?
Well, Joe, I bought this one with you,
I know,
in mind.
As which one it is.
No, as a...
Let me guess.
So as an employer, I bought this with you in mind.
Yep.
So I think it was 6 months ago on this podcast. Gina, I think you're on that episode.
I was on it. I remember.
We mentioned that there was like a pilot scheme I'm looking at my notes. This is a 40-day work week, which you might be more keen on. it's actually a 4-day work week. That 61 companies and 3,000 workers would be taking part in. And now the 6 months has run its course and the results are in, and the trial appears to have been a success, with only 3 of the 61 companies saying that they aren't planning to continue with the 4-day work week.
There's always going to be
three. Is there reasons why?
There's Joe, I'm glad you asked. There's, because the thing is, because a load of the employees said they liked it, like they were keen on it, but obviously that wasn't an immense shock that people would rather work 4 days rather than 5 days. But from like the employer's perspective, apparently revenue rose 35% compared to like that same period in previous years, and which they expected, because the idea was that people, when they're kind of the better rest, they've got a better balance, they're more productive. But the other one that people didn't think of was that there were far fewer people quitting. Because obviously at the moment, with this whole kind of the great resignation thing, there've been a ton of people who got used to probably not doing that much work during COVID and then went back to full-time work and just thought, we can't hack this. So this seems to have been a way of kind of answering that in a way, which again, from the employer's perspective, is better if they don't have to constantly be looking for new staff because people keep quitting.
It's interesting you mention that, because I had a conversation with James earlier and he mentioned that he felt quite burnt out. So maybe a 4-day working week would
suit
you.
Air out my dirty laundry.
I don't think I'm airing it out. It's a good open conversation.
It's the foxes. And I've just been working too hard.
You have been. You're always working too hard.
Yeah,
what's new?
Yeah.
Joe, you're not keen on giving them a 4-day week option?
I'm really interested in it, but I want to read the study in full, because I'd be really keen to understand, like, there were marketing agencies that took part, because where I think it's difficult is when you're selling time.
Well, exactly, because we could do a 4-day work week, but clients and stuff aren't, so it doesn't really work then, does it?
There's a couple of things. You can't all have the same time off, because you have to ensure that there's cover for clients, and clients work Monday to Friday, so you'd have to stagger weeks. So there's always like a client services person, or there's always the thing that I would like to understand is the companies that took part that have services rather than products, where you're selling time. Because if you're taking out a day of billable time, I can't see how that can't that's not going to impact you commercially.
Yeah, that's the point actually, because this is just based off of kind of productivity, but that doesn't you can't exactly say to a client, I promise we're going to work way harder in these hours to pay us the same amount. So it would kind of only work if it was done kind of for everyone on like a kind of global level.
Well, you move to a slightly different, you move to a different model, which to be fair is kind of how we do it anyway, which is you sell output. I mean, we work on output based on days, but then we take a view on it as well, because there's a value of an advertising campaign. There's a value to creation of a brand proposition. Do you know what I mean? And then you manage that by equating time against that. Those two things do work together. So that's the thing I don't know how you get around. So when they say productivity, I love it from a mental health perspective. I love it from work-life balance. Like, I love it. But I would wanna understand it more, because I think it's more challenging certain industries.
And also, I think that you're looking at a Western calendar as well. If you work with like Emirates Airlines, for example, or anything owned or out of Dubai, they don't work on Fridays. So you could probably look at that as a case study. They still work. They work on a Sunday. It's the other way around. But if you're working cross-country, you'd obviously then only have 4 billable days with that client. So you could probably look at those sorts of things as case studies as well.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bit of insight.
The podcast turned into a HR meeting. On how we're going to do a 4-day working week.
I'll be honest, this wasn't the answer I was hoping for.
No, same.
I'm sure there's a way around it, but it would need a lot of real careful thought so it doesn't impact the output and therefore the commercial potential, you know, because when we look at, you know, forecasting, and when you're looking at targets year on year, you take into consideration the number of billable staff, the rates you bill them out at, the percentages they utilize, all those kind of like systems you work out. And if one of those is impacted by 20%, it's a lot. It is a lot. So it does need thinking. But I'd be interested to understand, like, the companies that rejected it. And I know there's only 3 out of 60, which is pretty amazing. I'd love to know why.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing, because it probably needs more than a 6-month study. And you do wonder if, like, because obviously the employees loved it so much, was there pressure?
Of course they
was
did.
There pressure on the, yeah, exactly. Was there pressure on these 60 companies to show that they're not arseholes and kind of show, oh no, we know how happy this is making you guys. So they might not have actually been in favor of it as this study indicates. And the other thing as well with like a 6-month study, like, it's kind of like, you know, when like you're in school and like Ofsted come in and they basically tell you everybody fucking behave now.
Yeah.
It's like maybe everybody was just working fucking off for 6 months and it wouldn't actually be reflective.
You've got to be working longer. You can't tell me that you can suddenly lose a day and do the same hours as you normally would have done. I just don't I don't know
that's what
I'm sure there's efficiencies around, right? We're only going to have short meetings and we're going to change our structure of how we operate, but only to a degree, right?
But I think it can be changed, because the 40-hour work week was first became a thing in like ages ago. So if that came from somewhere, then surely the change can also come from somewhere.
Sure, but like things used to be in ancient Mesopotamia is probably different. Like you've grown, and I agree that over time you just kind of get used to it, and things would naturally work themselves out. But like, say if you went from overnight from a 5-day work week to a 4-day work week, there's going to be some kind of teething problems.
What and it would be working from home?
Unless you're being incredibly lazy, then like you're not, it would be literally impossible to be as productive in those 4 days as it would be in 5.
What's quite interesting is when you've got a high freelance model, it would probably work. And as I said, if you've got a staggered week, you could probably make it work. I am genuinely interested in it, and it is on our kind of blue sky project list to have a look at.
Thanks for bringing that story, James.
I knew you only put that in because I was here.
Probably.
Because I know what an understanding boss you are, and I thought you might want to talk about it.
Yeah.
So, Jay, I'll keep you updated with any more information I get about the 4-day week.
You have three stories this
week. I've got three stories because unlike Dom, yeah, I like to come prepared.
Very prepared.
Dom had one, it just got stolen.
Yeah.
That's going to be the title of this week's podcast.
Well, yeah. I've got, they're all like little ones. They're not necessarily new, but I thought it'd just be good to chat about. So, okay, so first one I want to talk about is this new filter on TikTok, which anyone that spent 5 seconds flicking through TikTok will have seen because you just can't avoid it. And it's basically like it beautifies you. And we've all been playing around with it earlier this morning. It's hilarious. And it just makes you like super hot, gorgeous looking.
Just want to add that Gareth in the group chat said that mine didn't look any different.
Well, I said the same thing, it didn't. Oh. That must mean you are the vision of perfection.
Well, this is the thing, because we obviously took turns just a second ago, and there was like, I don't know, whoever's like around, we did it, and it was probably 50% men, women did it. The women all looked significantly different and like supermodel gorgeous. And the men generally didn't look that different, which then...
Dom picked up on
that.
So
what's the
conclusion there?
Yeah.
And tell us what you saw.
Yeah, we were talking about it outside, wasn't we? And then I said, oh, I bet it's made, code's made by a man. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, you know, it is probably made to pick up on female features and enhance those more.
To what the standard but he thinks what, is beautiful.
Exactly, beautiful. But for what purpose? Because if you look at the young women, because like a couple of our young girls did not want to do it. Mm. They were like, I don't want to do it. I don't want to see it. I'm not interested. Mm. Whereas... I mean, Gina, you're young, but I loved it, obviously.
Joe wants to make it her new LinkedIn picture. I'm so professional.
I'm literally having it on everything. I'm going to have it on my WhatsApp. I'm going to have it on my LinkedIn. Yeah. That's it.
Just to kind of like, but just to subscribe to people at home, if they haven't seen the filter, it basically like smooths your skin out. It chisels like your jaw. It makes your nose a bit slimmer. It makes your lips fuller. And again, that kind of makes it seem
your
like
eyes sparkly.
Twinkle, yeah, sparkly. So it's like, what standard of beauty is this though? And also the reason there's so many filters out there, but the reason that this one is like has gone viral is because you literally cannot tell the difference. If you put your hand over your face, the filter don't move. It like it just stays on your face. Yeah. Whereas before, you know, your eyebrow would move or the lashes would kind of come off on the filter.
It's mad. It's
how kind of smart, I guess, it is.
But what's and I think what's he's obviously he. I love it that we've decided.
I think it is
he
though. I'm reading the thing. Yeah.
Because I think what's concerning is if he's done it for women, I think that's unusual. But like, why?
Could it be preying on? Could it kind of be partly? Could it make women look different more? Sorry, look more different as well. Just kind of, I don't know, maybe prey on insecurities
completely.
More, and also maybe they're more likely to use it and then kind of share the images. Generally, I think women probably take more selfies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was made for I guess the female face,
Because as I said, like not everyone wanted to do it, and some of the girls in the office were totally against, completely didn't want to do it, didn't want to see it. And when you flick through at a more sort of sinister level, when you flick through TikTok and you see people that have done it, a lot of people are saying that most of the responses are, oh, this is making me feel really shit about myself. Mm. I feel really horrible. Like, that's what I should look like, or that is what beautiful, inverted commas, is, and I don't look like that. You and I had the opposite.
I loved it.
I think beauty standards.
That's because potentially we might not be as insecure as other people are. So I feel like it could just be a case of that.
Probably, I feel like none of them look real, though. Like, they look like avatars to me.
But I think it's... I think it's, again, it's just something else which is preying on this insecurity
of
women and putting maybe potentially too much emphasis on the external beauty. I don't know. It's like, what's the purpose of it?
I wouldn't be surprised if it's, you know, some sort of marketing thing for some beauty products or something.
Like
if
we tweakments.
We find out, it was actually...
To sell something
or to do something, you know, to that end. It's always money, isn't it? Money. Yeah. But maybe.
What is like really interesting, as Gina said, it's like how real it looks. So from a catfish perspective,
good luck if you're on Hinge.
I really disagree.
Really?
James
really
doesn't think it looks real.
I don't think they look real. I think it looks like maybe
you're looking at it on people that you know.
I've
seen it on TikTok and it just comes up and someone's talking with this filter on.
Sure,
that's I wouldn't know it was a filter, because I don't know what that person looks like. And then they'll take it off, and then you're like, oh, wow, God, that looks so different. But Other than
but
that,
sorry, but this person walks up to you in public. Are you not going to say, sorry, why is your face so smooth?
James is like, showing a picture of Pablo.
Or anyone, for example.
Who used it earlier.
Or him.
Who's that sexy guy who is a picture
no,
of James?
No, but there are models that do look like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, there are. But people I just that think look it just, like it's the wider conversations around like AR filters and how like yeah. real they're getting and how like good they're getting. And then.
Well, it's the whole deep fake, yeah. isn't it? The other thing that I picked up, which is not new because it happened last week, was at Diesel's Milan runway show last week, where they had a drag artist dress up as Jennifer Coolidge. Let me just check out
who's
the
iconic lady from White Lotus that people are all obsessed with. So people
everyone,
seeing
she's
this.
Like she's having a whole moment.
Yeah, she is.
She's probably been having a moment since the first White Lotus. Lotus.
She was in
years ago.
Just
and what was
mom.
The other? Yes.
Ah.
What's the other thing she's been? She's been in a few things.
Was
that
she
have
legally
really blown
blonde?
Up.
I don't
know.
Was
you know what? I've never watched it.
That's a good film.
But what's really interesting is, so Alexi Stone is a drag artist, and he had this incredible prosthetics put on, and he looks
just
identical
yeah. you,
to her.
You can't
to
tell.
To the point where, because we've been talking to Diesel recently about potentially doing some stuff with them. And I was talking to one of our colleagues, Chris, and going, oh my God, Chris, you should tell them, like, how cool is that? That they had the two White Lotus stars at the show. That's amazing. That's really cool. Love it. And then I read that it was all a fake because it looks so realistic, you wouldn't know. So this whole thing of, like, that's almost like deep fake in real life.
It's almost strange that it's actually happening in real life and it's not something online that we're seeing all the time where people are, like, pretending to be other people.
But don't
and...
you think that's a bit... There's something slightly troubling about it. General, not think, so much in this instance, but I think this general kind of deep fake, AI.
100%. We talk about it nearly every week on the podcast.
So, but this one wasn't even. But this was this one just like makeup and prosthetics.
This is just makeup and prosthetics. Okay. Yeah.
So it's cool. It's
fine.
Yeah.
It's
but that's
clever.
Kind of like when you, cause you see these videos as well on like. Well, I don't because I have TikTok, but like because I watch them on Instagram Reels like an adult.
2 weeks later,
like a mature gentleman. But you see it where someone will start out like some way and then turn themselves like into a like fucking any character of like kind of any race, any look, like anything. Like it is kind of remarkable how convincing I guess some of these makeup artists are.
Like, have you ever watched Glow Up? I think it's a BBC Three thing.
Maya Jama was the presenter person. Yeah.
So absolutely incredible. And it's more like on that sort of special effects and extreme makeup because it's obviously trying to find stars, like makeup artists of the future in that kind of art world rather than necessarily just for, you know, fashion shows or beauty.
But then someone doing something like this, what's the difference between them doing it online? It's the same thing. You're pretending to
be someone
else.
I think you get away with more. You can probably get away with more online though, can't you? Because you can find like angles and stuff where like it will look really convincing or even fucking whack another filter on it, who knows. But to actually kind of to go out in the real world and be genuinely kind of mistaken for somebody who's incredibly recognizable and popular, that's impressive.
But I wonder why Diesel chose to do it though. Couldn't they
because,
just ask her?
Because they wouldn't have been able to probably afford to do it with
and then
her.
The insight is everyone likes this deep fake and everyone's exploring and everyone's whatever and it's like, oh, fooled you.
Maybe.
That would be the thing, wouldn't it?
But I do think there's a more like potentially sinister side when you're looking at the AI side of it. The other thing that I just saw was totally different. And
this
totally
is your last one, by
last
the way.
Last one, Joe.
Totally unrelated. But just like classic design, Nokia have updated, redesigned their logo for the first time in 60 years. So they basically are trying to shift perceptions. They're a Finnish-owned business. And, you know, we all know Nokia as the old school phones. And, I mean, I know I always see them as a mobile phone company.
Like a brick phone. They were the brick phones, weren't they? They'd last forever.
Yeah.
Couldn't break them.
Exactly. Reliable, all that kind of good, boring stuff, which is actually quite reflective, I think, in their old logo. And they've recently changed it. Because they wanted to convey and communicate that actually they're not just a mobile phone company, now they are a B2B innovation and tech company.
Okay.
And they've just done a really simple design where you can only see, they basically lost like some of the lines of the letters, and you can only realize it's Nokia when all the letters are together. And it's, I think it's just a really nice fresh take on a logo, and it's moving away from the kind of Burberry style, everything looks the same, mm-hmm. every font's mm. the same. This looks slightly different.
Beyond just the logo itself, it's the fact that they've changed logos at all, and it's kind of the story around it, because it was kind of quite, I guess, brutalist, and I didn't know, whereas now it's more kind of suggestive, and I didn't know Nokia didn't make phones anymore, and I feel like they kind of remind me of, well, we've worked with brands in the past and recently who kind of probably used to be a little bit more popular, but then either their consumers have kind of aged out or their competitors have passed them by. And like, I'd compare it to, I don't know if we can keep this, but I'd compare it to how, like, with when we started working with Mitre, there was a load of kind of positive feeling around the brand, but it was steeped in like nostalgia and almost these stereotypes. Like for Mitre, it was getting hit on the thigh in the winter and it stinging. And for Nokia, like Gina, you just did it there, it's like, oh, the indestructible phone. And like that's a stereotype that's probably kind of, or that's their brand reputation, that's probably like 20 years out of date now. So I think this is just them trying to kind of introduce themselves to partly to a new audience, and then kind of, I guess, play on that existing good feeling to their old audience, but then like redefine them according to what they actually do now.
I wonder why now.
Well, because they probably, you know, realize that where they're trying to take the business, they've got to convey a significant change, and it does that. You know, it does do that. When you think of, if you look at the old logo and you think, you know, mobile telephone company, and it does, you think that it's something like back in your deep psyche that you recognize it. And then the new, there's no evading the fact that it does feel really modern, and it does feel futuristic, and it does feel tech-led. Or it does do what it says it's going to do. Mm-hmm. I just personally think they could execute it slightly differently. But the logo itself, if you knew nothing about them and you showed that to a group of consumers and say, what do you think this brand's for, I think you get a sense.
You know, I don't know, some logos look kind of homogenized to me, but it certainly puts them in the category where it appears that they want to be with the rest of the kind of, like, I guess, tech and like fintech sort of brands. Yeah. Like moving them away from, I guess, like your kind of like Samsung, LG and all that sort of stuff. So I don't think it's revolutionary, but I do think it's effective in terms of where they see themselves currently fitting into the market.
And on that note, thank you, James.
You're
welcome.
Was
a really nice finisher, actually. That was a good conclusion. Thank you, Dom.
No worries.
Despite not bringing a story, you brought great opinions, great chat.
I didn't know that about Dubai.
There you go. It was appreciated.
There you go.
Thank you, Joe, for bringing more than
all
we bargained
of the stories,
for.
All of the stories.
Every story.
Well, technically, between Joe and I, we brought the stories. I had one stolen, in case you didn't hear me say that before.
I don't think that's been mentioned, but no. I think that'll be the last time I'm hearing that now. As host of the podcast, I don't want to hear it again. I'm sorry, Dom. I'm telling you off now.
You don't want to hear that.
It's got to move on.
We've got to move on. You've got to move forward from these things.
Yeah.
And fine. Of course, thank you so much, James.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thanks for having us, guys.
That's okay. And if we do want to listen to this podcast and see what made it in, where are we finding the newsletter?
Zachagency.com/cool-SHT, which we still need to change. Yeah.
In sync. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.